to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation, brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, let me say welcome to you all, and here's a little bit of a rundown of what this podcast is about. It's about animation. See, it's simple as that. I mean, like, that's why it's called the Animation Podcast. It's about animation. But specifically, however, it's about the latest news that happened this week. Okay, but for this week, however, it's actually kind of interesting. And I swear I didn't do this on purpose. Somehow it just falls into place where we actually have a little bit of a theme. Not entirely, but we got a bit of a DreamWorks theme going on, considering that they have released the teaser trailer and our first ever look into The Boss Baby. Then afterwards, the writer of Shrek 5 has been revealed, and then we will see what DreamWorks has recently done in terms of the wage theft lawsuit. But then we will be done with all the DreamWorks things going on, considering that there are a couple of movies from the 90s that are going back to the big screen, and we will have Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. So, for starters, we are going to begin to look at probably the biggest news that DreamWorks has brought out. And that is our first ever look into their next animated feature. Not Trolls, but the one that's going to be coming up, which is Boss Baby. Now, this is actually pretty interesting. This is a new IP. Technically, it's actually based on a book by Marla Frazzi, or I think that's how you pronounce her name. But, yeah, this is going to be the next new IP that DreamWorks is going to be bringing out after Trolls. So, maybe this could be good, maybe it'll suck. But now they have given us a little bit of an example of what this movie is going to be, considering that they have officially released the first ever teaser trailer. And on this teaser trailer, I'll try to describe the best that I can of what you pretty much see and summarize the whole plot, at least of what it gave us during the less than 2 minutes. So apparently it's about this boy and a family. It just has a boy, a mom, and a dad. And you know, they just live a normal, happy life. Everything's going fine. But then the parents brought in this baby, and he looks weird because he was wearing a suit and he even has a briefcase. And like, he always has that smug look on his face no matter what. And apparently the parents come in saying that this is the kid's new brother. And after that, like, the baby just wreaks havoc, and he pretty much dominates the entire house. Like, pretty much having everything about him be featured everywhere and kind of overshadowing the kid in a way. So, afterwards, the kid got suspicious, and at first he really doesn't trust that baby. But then one night, he soon discovers that the baby, not only can he talk, but he has this mentality of a corporate CEO. He knew that something really is up with this baby. And I guess during the rest, what they're not showing us is going to be this kid's relationship with this CEO baby. And I guess things will unravel from there. And when I was watching the teaser trailer for the first time, I looked at it and I thought to myself, that's it? I mean, is this really what this movie is about? Like, that's all it can offer? I mean, honestly, it was unappealingly dull. I'm not saying that it's bad. It's honestly such a dull, dull concept, especially one for an animated feature, because in a way, you can technically just make this into a live-action film. I mean, other than the baby itself, there's no need to have it be animated. But let's try to construct this. Let's see analytically what the trailer has offered us. Not the movie itself, but at least what we see in the trailer. Okay, the story. I honestly do not like this story whatsoever, because this is the same kind of recycled story that you would get in TV shows all the time. Like, this is often an old trope, this plot, where you got this new visitor coming into the household, and, like, all the other characters, they grow fond of him, they like him, except for the main character. At least one of the characters do not trust him. And basically the whole scenario is that the audience knows that something is up with the new visitor, who's pretty much like the villain or something, and they want to root for him, but everyone around him, like everyone around the main character who has suspicions, like, they pretty much treat him like a total dick. Honestly, it's old, it's cliched, and it's just very mean-spirited. Like, I think that's always the best way to describe it. It's like, whenever TV shows do it, it's a very mean-spirited episode, often. Because, like, they always... Because, basically, they treat the new guy with respect, and the person you're supposed to be rooting for as a... Like, they treat him like dirt. And this is a little bit of the same thing that you get here. I mean, the parents don't necessarily treat the kid like a jerk, but it kind of has that same scenario. Like, the same pattern goes, like, through and through upon this trailer. Like, you got the kid, who is the main character who has suspicions. You got everyone else who loves the new visitor, which are the parents. And you got the baby, who is the visitor, who has something up his sleeve. And with that said, the story, from what I can tell, it's pretty much a dud. In terms of the humor, yeah, it's not all that great. I mean, honestly, I didn't really laugh at this. This is supposed to be a comedy. That's the ultimate goal that it's trying to aim, is to be this hilarious animated comedy. But honestly, a lot of the jokes don't really work. They're supposed to be visual, in a sense. Like, a lot of the antics are supposed to be from the baby itself and all of his mannerisms, where, like, he kind of does things on purpose, where, you know, like, when he would snap his fingers, he would just go and cry. And, like, whenever he has his bottle and the mom would reach it, he always slaps the mom's hand. Like, honestly, they're kind of, like, cheap shots, and honestly, they're not really that funny. I mean, there is one time that I did chuckle a bit, and it was at one point that the kid pointed out that the baby has a briefcase, and it was actually kind of funny the way they animated the baby's expression. He was like, oh god, I hope nobody saw that. You know, honestly, that was the only part that I will admit that was actually well executed. I'll give kudos to the animators doing that scene, but other than that, the humor is not all that great. The animation itself, to that I will say, I get what they're trying to do. It's a little bit like Storks in a way. Actually, very similar like Storks, because you have this theme going on of a baby. But the big difference is that with Storks, you got a variety of characters. It's not just humans, but you also got different animals like wolves and, well, storks, of course. But the big difference is that, like, when we see the human characters, You can see the baby aspects, but they're very subtle. Like, they do have big eyes. Everything about their body is a lot more rounded than usual. And basically all of those aspects. Like, they're very, like, there are some baby aspects to it, but they're very subtle. In here, in the Boss Baby, they are absolutely not. Like, the eyes are absolutely huge on every single character, not just the baby, but also the kid and the parents. And even when you look at the kid, like, he has these small, itty-bitty little fingers. So, in this one, they try to push the baby motif a lot more than Storks. But one thing is for sure is that, and this has actually been mentioned before by the director, that they want to go a bit more in the cartoony route. And this is absolutely evident with the Boss Baby himself. You can definitely tell that they want to go in the cartoony route. Well, it's not, like, it is subtle, it's not over-exaggerated, but you can see that it is there in a way. It's not too overbearing, but then again, a lot of the humor is really dependent on the visuals, and a lot of it is honestly weak, so I wouldn't necessarily blame the animators. They just have, well, honestly, just a script that just seems kind of weak. And then, of course, you do have the characters. And, well, like I said before, a lot, considering that we're dealing with a story that's more of an old trope, we do have the tropes of the characters that are involved with it. The only thing that really is special is the boss baby himself, who secretly has this mentality of a corporate CEO, and he's voiced by Alec Baldwin. And honestly, like, maybe in terms of the characters, we don't really have enough to see if they would have, like, a character arc or development, something that we can gradually see the character have more of a personality to him. But I don't know, these characters are not necessarily as engaging. And honestly, the one big downfall that I got from this teaser trailer itself is actually the whole concept. Like, what makes this trailer stand out from any of the other DreamWorks films out there or any of the other animated films out there? And so far, the biggest selling point that it's telling me is that it has Alec Baldwin as this corporation baby. And literally, that's it. And I just want to say, now, this might sound very mean-spirited. This might sound like I'm completely insulting this movie, like, down to the ground. But I feel like the way that they're trying to sell Boss Baby is kind of the same way that they would sell Nine Lives. I mean, they, like, the reason why I say that is because they have such a little novelty that they really want to try to push hard to sell it. Like, with Nine Lives, you would see it going around saying, "Can we have Kevin Spacey as a cat?" And with Boss Baby, it's a little bit of the same thing. It's trying to sell us by saying, "We got Alec Baldwin as a baby." And that's it. Like, literally, that's it. There's nothing, like, there's nothing that would really elevate it. And honestly, like, if that is the true selling point of this movie, that Alec Baldwin is this corporation baby and nothing else, then I'm sorry, but I don't see why DreamWorks would greenlit this. It's such an absolute weak concept, especially from a corporation that you know for a fact that they can do absolutely better. I mean, even this year, we got Kung Fu Panda 3, and, like, soon we're gonna get Trolls, and at least I understand why they would greenlit a project like Trolls, because you could definitely tell the amount of imagination put into it. But with this, like, all they got is Alec Baldwin is a baby. And that's it. Like, why? Honestly, this is the reason why I look at this teaser trailer and I don't want to believe that this is really the movie that DreamWorks is selling me. There has to be more to this. And I know this is just the teaser trailer, but I mean, still, like, they you have to at least do a bit more to sell us on the idea of what this movie could be. I mean, even Sony did a far superior job with Smurfs the Lost Village. Like, that one, like, I won't say that, like, the teaser trailer that it gave us, like, for 30 seconds absolutely sold me. It didn't. But at least it got my interest to know a bit more of what it is. With this, however, I mean, it's giving me what I seem to understand. They got Alec Baldwin as a baby. There isn't really a lot more mystery to it. And that's why I feel like this trailer is just so weak that there has to be more than this. It can't just be Alec Baldwin is a baby and now we have our movie. There has to be more. Honestly, it can't be it. I know DreamWorks Animation, and they are capable to bring us something far grand, like, much more grand than something like this. I mean, like, what can they do? I mean, they gotta give me another trailer, because honestly, they really didn't give us much with this. They have to give us a trailer to show us more information in order to sell us the idea of the Boss Baby. Because if this is honestly it, just having Alec Baldwin as a baby, then honestly, we might deal with another DreamWorks bomb because there really isn't anything to sell. I mean, they gotta do more. I honestly, this can't just be it. So the only way that we'll have to know is that apparently the movie will be coming out at the end of March of 2017. And hopefully we'll get something more with the Boss Baby than just this. Because so far, wow, I am absolutely unimpressed. Now, for our next story, coincidentally enough, it actually has something a little bit more to do with Boss Baby. Well, not necessarily, but it does have a pretty strong connection. Now, apparently the Hollywood News went and interviewed Walt Dorn and Mike Mitchell because coming soon we are going to have Trolls, and they just want to have a little bit of a talk with them. But then they decided to ask the big question about what do they know about Shrek 5, because somehow that seems to be one of the biggest announcements in terms of animated features, that apparently Shrek is going to be making a big comeback after 9 years. And so far, they explained that nothing is really going on. They don't really have much information, even though one of the directors actually is maybe. Hold on. Okay, yeah. I was just checking upon my source here at Slash Films that, yeah, they have, that the directors of Trolls did work on Shrek. Walt Dorn actually worked on several of them, Shrek 2, Shrek the Third, and Shrek Forever After, while Mike Mitchell is actually a director of the last movie, Shrek Forever After. But there is one little piece of information that they do know about, is that apparently the writing has been given to Michael McCullers. Now, if you don't know who Michael McCullers is, he is actually credited as the writer of some episodes for Saturday Night Live during the late 90s, and also is the writer of both Austin Power sequels, The Spy Who Shagged Me and Goldmember. But there is actually something very interesting about it, is that this is actually not the first animated feature that McCullers is actually assigned with. While he is working with that, he just finished doing the writing for The Boss Baby, and that's where the connection is. Not only is Michael McCullers going to be the writer of Shrek 5, but he also just wrote Boss Baby, in which we just recently talked about, coincidentally enough. And he's also going to be the writer of Hotel Transylvania 3. And that's pretty much the only case that we know so far. In fact, if I have to go into more of it, this is what Mike Mitchell said. That's a pretty good story. They've got a pretty good story. It's been written by Michael McCullers, who wrote all the Austin Powers films. He came up with a really great idea that they're exploring. Okay, well, technically, not according to IMDb. I mean, technically, he's only credited with Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, and Goldmember. I mean, other than that, there's maybe Austin Powers, Electric Pussycat Swingers Club, but that's pretty much it. But yeah, basically, this is to all say that Shrek 5 is going to be written by Michael McCullers. But funny enough, actually speaking of Austin Powers, considering that they brought in McCullers into the project, like this is actually not the first time that he'll be working with Mike Myers. So at least there will be a bit of that connection there. But I'm going to be honest, with this announcement, I am honestly not 100% sure to know how to feel about this, because the thing is, Michael McCullers did not really wrote a lot of stuff. I mean, you'll hear news outlets say that the guy who wrote the Austin Powers sequels will also be writing Shrek 5. But honestly, you look at his IMDb, that's all that he has done. That's his most popular credit, was that he did the Austin Powers sequels and that's it. In recent years, he really didn't do a lot. The most that I could say is that he actually made his directorial debut with a script that he wrote with the 2008 Baby Mama with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. other than that, he did write a little bit of extra material for Mr. Peabody and Sherman for DreamWorks, but literally that's it. There's nothing much. And that, like, with that said, this really isn't enough to determine if it's actually going to be a good or bad thing that they actually got McCullers onto Shrek 5. If anything, like, maybe you can determine with Baby Mama if DreamWorks actually made the right choice. But honestly, we'll probably have to wait until The Boss Baby is actually released to know about the capabilities of what McCullers has nowadays as a writer for animated features. Considering that, like, this is not going to be the first time we'll hear his name. Like, they got The Boss Baby, and then the year after that, it's going to be Hotel Transylvania 3, and then after that, it's going to be Shrek 5. So The Boss Baby will be a big factor into it, especially considering that it is from DreamWorks, so at least it's going to be in the same watchful eye. But then again, actually, come to think of it, some people could counter-argue with that, considering that The Boss Baby was actually done before the deal with Comcast, and then Shrek 5 is now made under Comcast, so there could be a big difference. But still, like, it is still under the same umbrella, and considering that, like, we just talked about the trailer for Boss Baby, and I was mostly unimpressed with the results, so maybe it's not going to be a good sign for Shrek. But then again, it could also not be a good sign for Hotel Transylvania 3 as well. But actually, then again, when you think about the latter, that actually doesn't matter, because, like, no matter what, I'm pretty certain that when Hotel Transylvania 3 will be released, it's really not going to change the mind of people who already know what their stance is in terms of the Hotel Transylvania franchise altogether. Like, those who are not fans of it will still remain not fans of it, and the ones who are fans of it, they will still enjoy the Hotel Transylvania films no matter what. It doesn't matter how bad the animation, the writing, the directing, the acting, or whatever. As long as the Genndy Tartakovsky name is still attached to Hotel Transylvania, the fans will be happy. And I can guarantee you, that's pretty much the only reason so far that I can imagine why Hotel Transylvania still has a huge fan base as it is now. It's because of the Genndy Tartakovsky name. I can guarantee you that if you keep the movies as it is, like, the movies did not change whatsoever, but if you take away the Genndy Tartakovsky name altogether, just take off that, I can assure you that the Hotel Transylvania films, they will have the exact same treatment as any other recent Adam Sandler film, because there really isn't anything else to defend it with. I can pretty much guarantee you that. So, Michael McCullers, going back into the subject of what we are talking about, I'm pretty sure Michael McCullers' involvement with Hotel Transylvania won't necessarily play a big factor into how the movie itself will come out creatively. Or, well, considering we are talking about Sony Pictures Animation, might as well put creatively in quotes. But yeah, that's basically the whole news, is that we got this guy working on Shrek 5, but it's way too early to determine if this is actually a good thing or not, that if Michael would actually be a strong writer for Shrek 5. Because the only, like I said before, the only things that we can determine that if we can fully know if he's the right choice for Shrek 5 is with The Boss Baby and Hotel Transylvania 3. And once those two movies are going to be released, it's going to be too late. Like, Shrek 5 will be around the corner. So, I don't know. It feels like a huge gamble. But for that, I will say, is this a good thing? Is it a bad thing? For that, we'll just have to wait and see in 3 years from now, considering that Shrek 5 will be released in 2019. Okay, now on to our last DreamWorks story here. We are going back onto the wage theft lawsuit. Now, some of you might have heard about it, some of you have not, but it's officially been a little bit more than 2 years that this has been going on, and that this has been released into the public. That apparently between 2004 and 2010, all the major animation studios, from Disney to Pixar to DreamWorks to Blue Sky to Sony to all those companies, they decided to come together not only to illegally lower the salary of their animators and their artists, but at the same time, they also agreed not to poach each other's employees, you know, to make sure that they don't go snooping around in another studio just to hire artists. So they decided to do that. But nowadays, at least this year, it has seriously been damaged, at least for the side of the animation studios. In the beginning, it started out with Blue Sky Studios, who decided that they want to go out and settle for nearly $6 million. And then shortly afterwards came Sony, and they would have to pay more than double with $13 million, considering that they had two studios working onto the whole ordeal with Sony Pictures Imageworks and Sony Pictures Animation. But now DreamWorks Animation decided to step in, and they will settle with a total of $50 million onto their settlement. If I may go into my source here at Cartoon Brew, it states, documents filed with Federal District Court in San Jose reveal that the studio has agreed to pay $50 million to members of the class of animation and visual effects artists affected by the suit. Those artists include animation and visual effects employees who worked at DreamWorks between 2004 and 2010. If the court finds the agreement fair and accepts the settlement, a notice will be sent to those employees informing them what to do to ensure that they will receive the share of the settlement. So at least they can have that resolved. And if we look onto the lawsuit that is going on now, considering that Blue Sky ditched the lawsuit, Sony ditched the lawsuit, and now DreamWorks ditched the lawsuit, there is only one company that remains that is a part of this lawsuit, and that is, of course, the ringleader of all this, Disney. And they got a lot of they got a lot of studios under their wing that is affected by this. They got Walt Disney Animation Studios, they got Pixar, they got Lucasfilms, and they got Image Movers back when it used to be Alive. So they got all those companies, and honestly, they are going to be the hardest ones to really break. I mean, it's honestly going to be really difficult for them to back down. But maybe this will help. Maybe this could be a bit of an aid. Now that Disney is pretty much on their own in their situation. But then again, if they do have to go and stop this lawsuit entirely and make a settlement, I can imagine that the numbers are going to be absolutely huge. Like I said before, they got four, maybe even more studios under their wing that's a part of this lawsuit. So it would not surprise me whatsoever if they would have to, have to pay out somewhere in the 9-digit range, somewhere more than 100 million, absolutely more than double than what DreamWorks Animation has to settle. But going into DreamWorks Animation, this is honestly something that I knew for a long time that this would actually happen. Considering that now DreamWorks Animation is under new management, now that it is a part of the family of NBC, Universal, and Comcast, right when the deal was announced, I knew that eventually this has to be done somewhere. This little piece has to be over, that NBC Universal has to step in, just pay out the settlements, make sure there is no trouble whatsoever, and just move on with their brand spanking new DreamWorks Animation. That I knew it was going on. I'm surprised that it took a little bit of a while, but at least they got it done, and now DreamWorks Animation can finally move on. Now, how long this lawsuit is going to take is all going to be determined by Disney. If they're going to still act tough and still move forward with this entire lawsuit to keep this whole thing going, or if they will, decided to make a settlement, get this lawsuit completely over with, and now pretty much all the animators and artists in the 2000s can pretty much rest at ease now. Like, now they could rest. They no longer have the troubles. Like, everything is pretty much good for them now. I don't know, but it's like now the ball is in Disney's court. And honestly, who knows? We'll just have to wait and see how this will go, but I'm pretty certain now we are in the final chapters of the wage theft lawsuit. And this will pretty much conclude with all the DreamWorks stories that we have. But the animation podcast is not entirely done yet. We still have a bit more stories going on, and this actually has to do with a certain movie that we all know and love, or at least some of the 90s kids know and love, and that is Pokemon, the first movie. And let me just say that, like, I've been a Pokemon fan for life, and I remember, like, I was so huge onto the anime. I remember watching it since the very beginning, right when the anime started back in, I believe it was 98 or something like that. And, I even remember as a kid, I was actually there when Pokemon the first movie was actually released in theaters. I was one of those kids that got into it, and I even remember, and I still have to this day, the Pokemon card that would be given with it. Like, you got this weird looking Mewtwo card, but yeah, I remember back in the day. And yes, of course, I was one of the millions of kids that did cry when Ash was turned into stone and all the Pokemon put on their best sad face and stuff like that. Yes, I was one of them too. Honestly, yeah, that's pretty much my whole relationship with Pokemon, the first movie, at least. And ever since then, like, now that the people who have watched Pokemon the first movie grew older and, you know, now they're pretty much young adults at this point, you know, like, people are starting to get pretty nostalgic. But apparently, the Pokemon Company decided to do something a little bit special with it. Now, as you may know, Pokemon is celebrating its 20th anniversary, and so far it's having its biggest year pretty much ever, I would probably say, considering not only do we have the major hype of Pokemon Sun and Moon coming out, but at the same time, they were doing all these different sorts of events going on with the games. And at the same time, of course, you got Pokemon Go, which is, I think I can easily say, the biggest app of the year. Like, my God, did Niantic and the Pokemon Company made so much money out of it. They even made so much of my money out of it, unfortunately. But the whole thing that I want to say is that apparently Pokemon Company decided to do an extra little thing to celebrate the 20th anniversary of Pokemon, and that is to take Pokemon the first movie and bring it back into theaters. So apparently they actually made this announcement. I'm going on my source here at Game Rant. Where does it say here? Yes. Announced on the official Pokemon site, the Pokemon Company revealed that Pokemon the First Movie will be shown at select Cinemark theaters on October 29th and November 1st. The movie, which tells the story of the Pokemon Mewtwo creating an army of clone Pokemon, will be played at over 200 movie theaters, with tickets costing a mere $5. The film will be preceded by the short Pikachu's Vacation, just as it did when the original premiere in the US back in the late 1990s. And honestly, like, when I first heard about it, I was honestly really intrigued. Now, I don't think I'll actually get a chance to actually see Pokemon the first movie back in theaters, considering that Canada does not have any Cinemark. Like, the only things that we got is just Cinema Guzzo and Cineplex. But what is actually very coincidental, that I just stumbled upon it, and I was talking to a friend of mine regarding this, but very coincidentally enough, I discovered that this is not the only 90s movie that's going to be re-released in theaters. At the same time, Space Jam is doing the same thing. Now, apparently, Fathom Events, the same people that brought the Iron Giant Signature Edition and Batman the Killing Joke onto theaters, decided that they want to bring in Space Jam back into theaters in honor of the 20th anniversary of the film. The dates that they have set up will be on Sunday, November 13th, which is at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m., and also Wednesday on November 16th at 7 p.m. But on top of that, what they are going to do as a bonus is that they will put in an animated short before Space Jam, which will be the 2011 CGI animated short, I Taught a Putty Tat, which originally was shown before Happy Feet 2. Now, if I may take a quote from Fathom Events, Vice President of Studio Relations Tom Lucas, he has stated, "Space Jam has been a family favorite for the last 20 years and is sure to remain so for the next 20 and beyond. This event is the perfect chance for audiences of all ages to view the film as it was meant to be seen on the big screen." And what a funny coincidence that these two movies, basically two animated films that made a huge impact on animation in the late 90s, would get a chance to be re-released in theaters. You got Pokemon the first movie, which even though nowadays it is not the it is no longer the highest grossing movie based on a video game, it still is the highest grossing animated film based on a video game. You got that going on, which would then follow a long string of movies. I think nowadays there are more Pokemon movies than there are Land Before Time movies. And then you also got Space Jam, which, say what you will about the movie itself, and yes, I know the concept is absolutely bonkers, but the technical achievement that has been achieved in Space Jam, it's pretty much like taking Who Framed Roger Rabbit and give it a boost, like level up what they have achieved with Who Framed Roger Rabbit onto this, and it is absolutely beautiful. And you know, it's kind of funny actually seeing these two films actually get re-released in theaters, and honestly, what I find to be kind of funny is that you will never find such a giant herd of 90s kids and millennials just flock into the theaters just to see these two films. Like, I can understand with The Iron Giant, maybe you will get some animation fans going in there. And also Batman the Killing Joke, considering it was the most hyped up Batman movie that I've ever seen. Or at least the most hyped up animated Batman movie that I've ever seen. I can imagine, like, the same effect, like, it'll definitely work out with Pokemon and also Space Jam, where I can imagine, like, with Pokemon going on, you're gonna see, just a bunch of young adults just walking around in the streets, just going in circles, like, they could still be playing Pokemon Go, just to go and achieve that before they can go and watch, the movie, or maybe, like, even, like, cheer, like, you're gonna hear such rowdy kids going on, just cheering on, like, whenever a Pokemon battle, and, like, they better give free tissues whenever that scene will happen, if you know what I mean. But then you also got Space Jam, which, honestly, whenever I would talk to my friends, or anybody who's pretty much born in the 90s, they will have absolute fond memories of Space Jam, in a way that, because it's their introduction to the Looney Tunes, it's like they owe their life to Space Jam, because that, like, for, I can definitely guarantee you, for many people, that's their introduction to characters like Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and Yosemite Sam and the Tasmanian Devil, Sylvester, Tweety, Foghorn Leghorn, and all those people. Like, this is their introduction. So rewatching Space Jam, I'm sure for them, it's going to be like an absolute trip of nostalgia. But you know what's actually very coincidental, not just all this, but also with Space Jam, not too long ago, they did announce that there is going to be a Blu-ray commemorating the 20th anniversary of Space Jam. So I can imagine some people, they really want to go into all this hype that after that they see Space Jam in theaters, they're going to jump into their nearest DVD store or electronic store, and they're going to go and get Space Jam, the 20th anniversary. That is, if they do not have the DVD or Blu-ray right now. Or, I don't know, maybe they would want an upgrade, but yeah, this is pretty much all to say that there is apparently some 90s films going on, rebooting onto the theaters. If you guys want to check out Pokemon, it is scheduled on October 29th and November 1st. Just check out your the schedulings with your Cinemark theater. And for Space Jam, you got to check out on Fathom Events that it will be going on November 13th at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. and also on November 16th at 7 p.m. And so finally, we got Matt's Pick of the Week. And for this one, I decided to go into something that I keep hearing about, but I wasn't necessarily sure, but I've heard a lot of word of mouth, and I thought it was something that I wouldn't necessarily access to it, or maybe I would see later on, so I didn't necessarily bother, but something actually did happen where I did get an opportunity to see it, and honestly, I think now's a really good time to share this with you guys if you have not heard about this. This is all about an animated short, and right now it's making massive buzz all around the animation community and even with, movie fans alike. And what I am talking about, of course, is a short called Borrowed Time, directed by Andrew Coates and Lou Hamu Lihaj. I hope I am saying his name right, because it's not really that easy to pronunciate. Now, beforehand, I just want to say that the term Pixar quality has often been thrown around. Often, like when you really want to compliment a piece of animation, often they will say that it has Pixar quality. Now, that's just kind of an exaggerated expression in a way. But with Borrowed Time, this is something that is literally Pixar quality. That this is purely the same quality that you would get with Pixar. And I say that because this is actually made in Pixar. Now, this is not actually licensed by Pixar. You're not going to see Borrowed Time premiered next to another animated feature. Like, this is not going to be the animated short that you're going to see before either Cars 3 or Coco. This is entirely independent. This is entirely on their own. But some of you might be wondering, how is it that somehow, if the case that Borrowed Time is not an official Pixar short, then how was it made at Pixar? Well, let me tell you, apparently Pixar actually has this program called Pixar's Co-op Program. And this is actually something that is within the Pixar University, where you can actually apply in there and like just get the right training in order to actually work at Pixar Animation. And when you do get that, like when you do get in there, you actually have a chance to work on a project using the technology of Pixar. Now, under normal circumstances, people who actually do go in there, normally they would just make live action films and maybe they will use Sony's technology to go and make some special effects and stuff like that. Or they would just mostly use the live action stuff, like they'll just use lighting, they'll use the cameras, and they won't go too crazy with it. But this is apparently the first time that a bunch of guys decided to come in and they want to work on an animated feature. And this actually took them a while, I think nearly 5 years to make, or at least as long as a Pixar film, at least. You know, like how, like the amount of time that it took to make a Pixar film would take as long to make this kind of animated short. And the reason for that is not because like they painstakingly worked hours and hours and hours onto it. That's not necessarily it, but it's more that because what I'm trying to say is that because Andrew and Lou, they actually work at Pixar, they can't really work on borrowed time while they actually work in Pixar. Like, the mandatory thing to do, and, well, because it's under their contract and because it's their godforsaken job, is that they have to work, they got to work on the movies during their regular working hours. Like, they would have to work on stuff like Brave and Monsters University and Inside Out and all those films. It is only during after hours or before hours or even during the weekends that they would actually have time to go and work on this animated short, while at the same time not use too much of their resources. Like, they actually got, Pixar actually has like over 30,000 computers to farm the rendering and all that stuff. Like, they're only allowed to go and use 100 of them. But during the entire process, and there's actually a very fascinating article posted on Cartoon Brew a while ago, this was posted at the end of July, that it was a massive learning curve for both Andrew and Lou, that when they were making it, they don't really have, specific entire jobs to work on Pixar. Like, they only had specific things, like, Lou, hold on, just want to see, just taking my source in Cartoon Brew. Well, they don't necessarily say what they do at Pixar, but one of them is just a character artist. But one of the biggest learning curves for them is mostly to do every aspect of an animated, project, where they're mostly assigned to do one thing, but they got to do literally everything. Rendering the textures, character design, character animation, background layout, lighting, and all that kind of stuff. Every element that would make an animated project, they have to go and create. But at the same time, they do actually manage to get some help from other animators at Pixar. Like, they were more than happy to lend out a helping hand. But simultaneously, actually, not only is it a learning curve for them for the process itself, but also in terms of making the story. And sometimes they would have to learn the hard way in order to make some sacrifices just to keep it as this small animated short. Because keep in mind, this is not really long. The short itself is actually about maybe a bit more than 6.5 minutes. So when they would have to do, what was really difficult for them was to try to figure out what kind of story that they want to do, what kind of characters that they have to keep. And there was at one point that they felt absolutely heartbroken was the decision they had to make to cut out an old man character, in which they were, very well into the process, but they decided to change the story a bit and just cancel out the old man. And, it was absolutely it was a difficult choice for them. But on top of that, there is one person that they did mention who actually was a massive help, and that was the producer, Amanda Deering Jones. She stepped in, she actually works at Pixar as a script supervisor. She decided to step in to be the producer, but not just that, she also did a few other stuff as well. She actually was a massive helping hand in terms of the score and the sound mix, where she even brought in Gustavo Santaolalla. I think that's how you say his name, Gustavo Santaolalla, in order to do the score. And this guy is actually very legit when it comes to being a composer. He has previously done works including Brokeback Mountain, Babel, and The Last of Us. So they really got this massive dude. And on top of that, in terms of all the sound, it was actually done so at Skywalker Sound. So, Amanda Jones actually did help out to, at least in terms of the audio, to really make it top of the line. And what actually did end up happening is that we resulted with borrowed time afterwards. This is pretty much, the biggest darling to film festivals. This was an animated short. After it was pretty much complete, they were just jumping to festival after 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 festival. It was going on and on and on, and that's how it actually got a bit more attention. But just recently, not too long ago, they have actually posted, you can find it on Cartoon Brew or at least on Vimeo. They actually did post it, or actually, I just checked the timeline, and the entire short itself, if you don't necessarily count the credits, it's actually it's 6 minutes long. It's just 6 minutes long. But yeah, you could check, you could pretty much go and check out the entire animated short of Borrow Time to see for yourself. And may I just say, after watching it, I was honestly shocked. Like, this is visually, absolutely, this is Pixar quality. I mean, the rendering on this is really top-notch. In fact, it's even better looking than some of the animated films nowadays. Like, this is way, like, this is honestly better looking than some animated films like Ice Age or Ratchet and Clank or The Wildlife or Norman the North. Like, okay, yeah, that, like, I'm hitting the low bar here, but still, like, this is legit top-of-the-line feature-length quality. The textures are amazing. The backgrounds are so beautifully detailed. You know, the characters have a pretty interesting design. And, oh my god, the animation, very, very intense, very smooth, very action-packed. Absolutely adore it. And the story itself, oh my god, like, I really got invested in this. Like, it was beautiful. Absolutely tragic. Like, honestly, I can imagine people will cry over this, but it's beautiful. It is honestly so amazing. I'm not going to describe you, what the story is about in Borrow Time. All I'm going to say is that this is pretty much a homework for you guys. After you are listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast, once this is done, you got to go online and check out Borrow Time. You can't, like I said before, you can either go and find it on Vimeo or you can check it out on Cartoon Brew. Either or, but you just have to see it for yourself. And I think I'm going to say this right now. There is a very good chance that this is not going to be the last time that we will hear about Borrowed Time. I got a pretty good feeling that this could have a chance to be a contender to have an Oscar nomination at the Oscars. Honestly, for Best Animated Short, it would not surprise me whatsoever because it is absolutely beautiful. It is very well done, crystal clear, very well written, very well animated. It's just, my god, I gotta give major props to Andrew and Lou for making such a beautiful work. And by the way, there is one more thing I would like to mention, is that after you watch this, you're probably going to leave and probably wonder if you want to actually see a legit animated feature done by both Andrew and Lou. And they actually did mention that even though they did learn a lot about the process of making an animated project, they did state that they're not necessarily ready to work on something on in such a grand scale that would have such a huge budget, like an animated movie. So in terms of that, you might have to wait a little bit longer for it. But yeah, this honestly, for at least for what they have done with Borrow Time, it is absolutely beautiful. My god, what a phenomenal piece of work there. And that is all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at animat505. If you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be lovely. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button and leave us a little comment on your thoughts on the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!